Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone that's on your list, all in one spot. Gifts that spark joy, wonder, delight, and that it's exactly what I wanted kind of feeling. They scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things. Somehow they know exactly the perfect gift for every single person you know. Here's a few of my favorite gifts that I found on their site, like Smokey the Bear socks, corporate nonsense generator, holiday cocktail bombs, or Caribou Cocoa Buddies set of two. What about an acoustic frog amplifying phone speaker? Uncommon Goods has it all. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches, so shop now before they sell out this holiday season. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made right in the US of A. They have the most meaningful, out-of-the-ordinary gifts anywhere. They even have gifts you can personalize. And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice.
To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/theory. That's uncommongoods.com/theory for 15% off. Or just check the show notes of this podcast. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery. Not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
Conjures up images of dark, hooded figures, strange, disconcerting rituals, perhaps idols of horned gods or goddesses. In mainstream media, cults are often maligned and seen as outliers and aberrations that draw in only those who are weak-willed or easily manipulated. But there are many times that this is not the case. People drawn to these alternative religious practices are often bright and creative individuals who happen to be in a time of transition of their identity or just down on their luck and searching for something to pull them from a general malaise of unfulfillment. Then they are drawn into the sphere of influence produced by charismatic or mysterious individuals who make them feel wanted, who satisfy their need for belonging or understanding. Sometimes these leaders truly believe what they preach, whether of a coming Armageddon or a way of life leading to spiritual salvation. But more often than not, we hear of the leaders who abuse their power and those who live under its influence. They force their followers to commit acts of debasement, mutilation, and even murder, all based on the promise that these acts will grant their followers the fulfillment they crave or save their very souls. Today, we take a look at a few of those cults that took the dark and twisted turns into the realms of the things out of nightmares. That being said, this episode of Alien Theorist Theorizing is brought to you by the ATT Heavenly Salvation Society. Are you worried about the impending apocalypse? I know I am. Well, fret no more, friend. The ATT Heavenly Salvation Society is here to help. Don't be caught high and dry when the world is scoured clean by holy fire. The simple pledging of your unquestioning and undying loyalty, you can make sure of your cozy place in the afterlife. Membership includes a printed ATT poncho to keep you dry and clean from the rains of boiling blood, official ATT earbuds to drown out the seductive wailing of the Whore of Babylon, and a 6-month supply of tasteless, low-nutrition gruel that will keep you malnourished and pacified as we break your will and remake you into mindless slaves. The team at ATT does not actually have a cult or endorse any cult or cult-like activities of its listeners. Any organization that suppresses free will and independent thinking is frowned upon by Team ATT. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Alien Theorists Theorizing, Case File 60. I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And that's all we got today.
Our roster's a little loaded.
Roster's a little lacking. Braden is working. Andrew is taking some test to progress his real job further. I'm sitting
to
here
to determine if he is fully mentally competent to stand trial.
Exactly, pretty much exactly. I've been drinking beer for a while. Dan has just gotten up. What time is it there, Dan?
Let's see. It's 12:55 p.m. So I've been up for a little bit, combing over all this stuff, trying to find a new savior since we're going to be talking about cults today.
Cults. Now, a cult is pretty much. What's the difference between a cult and religion?
A cult is, by definition, is usually a, I mean, technically cult and religion are the same thing, but a cult usually today has the definition, like colloquial definition to it, that some people who have beliefs which are apart from the mainstream of the big religions and Christianity, Buddhism, those ones. So it's usually something that I would say a cult is probably somebody who has less than 1,000 people.
So it's pretty much just a religion that's not popular yet.
Yeah, probably they don't have tax exempt status. I think that's what I would call.
That's probably the big one.
That's the difference.
All right. Before we really get into cults, though, we don't have the UFO case of the week because Braden has the book and the machine. So we're gonna go straight to space news.
Space news.
Dan, you got some space news?
I've got two chunks of space news. So first one, this space news actually comes from they just published a paper about it. But this actually happened back in September. So back in September, an amateur astronomer named Victor Busso took a picture of an actual supernova in progress, basically, which is not something that normally happens. Most according to astronomers at the Instituto de Astrofísica de La Plata in Argentina, they say it's about a 1 in 10 million chance that you would catch a star going supernova randomly.
1 in 10 million?
1 in 10 million. So this guy hit the, you know, astronomy jackpot.
So I guess he just has telescope pointed at the right spot at the right time and he caught
it. Yeah, it was pretty neat. So he took these photographs back in September. But what's interesting is that they just published the paper on the 21st, so this week, about how the photos that he's taken have proven a lot of the theories that scientists had about supernovas. So most of the stuff that scientists know about supernovas is theoretical. Like they've just kind of pieced it together from what would theoretically happen if a star lost enough mass or gained enough mass that became critical and went supernova, and what happens in that process. And these pictures, these photographs have actually shown what actually happens in between those, which is pretty neat. I thought that was kind of cool.
Man, so because when they take they've taken pictures of supernovas before, but after they've already expanded, right? They're already
jetted
out.
This one was pretty much like the collapsing of the star and then the explosion all together. So he caught all of it on film, which is insane to actually think it happened. So it's pretty neat.
That's actually really fucking cool.
Yeah. There's a the photographs capture the first known images of a supernova and what they call a shock breakout, and where the pressure wave from the star's exploding core hits gases. And then the star's surface brightens significantly. So it was pretty neat. That's pretty cool.
That's badass.
I know. Let's see. So space news round two. So I think everybody heard about Tesla putting up their putting their car up into space, right?
Yeah, I think we talked about it a little while ago, but super cool.
Yeah, it's super cool. But did you know there was a second thing on that rocket? Did you know there's a second payload?
Are you talking about the hard drive thing?
Oh, did we already talk? Did you guys already talk about it?
I don't know. I don't know if we actually put it on the podcast. I know me and Brayden talked about it. I can't remember if we recorded it live or it was just something we were talking about before the podcast. But let's talk about it again. It's because it's super cool.
Yeah, the second payload on that Falcon Heavy was the quartz discs that they put on there. These quartz discs are holding like almost all the data. Basically, I would say probably like the whole internet. These quartz discs have been laser inscribed, and each point on the disc, which is about 200 nanometers wide, and that's a bit bigger than a single HIV virus, if you kind of for relative size, I guess. And these discs can basically, they said these can last if nothing happens to them, or they aren't shattered or hit with like big huge waves of radiation, can last for anywhere millions, even billions of years.
Right. It's like a new type of like hard drive that can survive in space.
Yeah, it's super neat. The foundation that put it out, I think they're called the ARC Mission Foundation that put it out. I think that was the first one, but they're kind of planning to put, you know, 100 if not thousands of these things out into space just to, you know, just in case something happens to us, you know, we'll have a record that we were there.
They'll have all of human knowledge and a Tesla car.
Yep.
That's what we're leaving behind.
I think aliens will be fairly impressed.
a convertible car in space.
They'll be like, that's like the Price is Right for them. That's a hit the jackpot.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. That car is like orbiting. They missed the Mars orbit, but it's orbiting now out to like the asteroid belt or something.
I think they were saying that even with the car out there, they said that radiation, like space radiation, is going to just rip it to bits in a few years, I think is what they were saying. So might not last that long. Oh. Not longer than those discs.
Oh, well, they'll have the disc. The disc will be available for all aliens for all time.
Yep. So hopefully that'll be neat.
Okay, well, we're on Tesla. Pretty much seems that all the good space news lately is Tesla and SpaceX. Because SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket with a pre-flown first stage successfully delivered to orbit today. The first two prototypes for the company's huge Starlink satellite internet constellation. So what they want to have in the 2020s sometime, SpaceX wants to install like something like thousands of these satellites, like over 2,000 of these mini satellites in low Earth orbit. So it's going to compete with like fiber optic lines for broadband latency.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
Because right now, I guess like, I can't remember what the orbit is, but right now the satellites that are broadcasting internet are 2,000 kilometers up. Or maybe maybe even more. So the latency is like way greater than fiber optic right now.
Right. So it's a lot slower.
So this is going to take like broadband internet to all points of the earth, like all points in Africa or anywhere like remote. You'll be able to get like.
Awesome.
I don't know how many megabytes per second, but we're talking. If we're talking fiber optic speed, then that's at least 100, right?
Yeah, that's amazing in itself. It's just that's the one limiting factor in internet is just laying down that cord and getting, you know, you don't get crappy internet, you know, and you don't have to pay as much. I assume it'll be at least competitive in price.
It seems like they're starting to put out all their stuff for pretty cheap. I know like the cars started off really expensive, but they're trying to put out like the cheaper model of their electric cars, and they have the solar panels, like the solar shingles for the roof.
Yeah,
and they're supposed to be equivalent to a normal roof. I assume
everything gets cheaper as technology increases. The batteries get smaller, you know, things get lighter. So I assume that things will only get cheaper from here on if they can keep on going and don't get bogged down. And it'll be all right.
Yeah, like if they can reuse the same like rocket over and over again, it's just a matter of time before, like. before we can at least go commercially to low Earth orbit. That'd be so cool.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be neat.
Man, that's like a lifelong dream for me. That's like a retirement gift to myself.
When do we get? It could be within our lifetime. I don't, you know, I'm hoping. Here's hoping.
By the time I finally retire when I'm like 75, because that's what it's going to have to work for that long to be able to retire probably. I'm going to space. I don't care.
Going to space.
All right. I'm going to go. I got one more SpaceX thing because they're just too cool.
Yeah.
The Dragon spacecraft operated by SpaceX carries cargo to the International Space Station under commercial agreements the company has with NASA. So it's the first private spacecraft to dock with the ISS.
Ah, that's neat.
Yeah, this is cool.
So private industry getting into there, bringing space travel, affordable space travel for you and your family.
Pretty much.
We'll get there, you know. I can't remember any of the good commercial space travel ones from science fiction. I can't remember any off the top of my head. But this is the beginning. Just the beginning. We'll be having cosmic truckers in no time.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if you've seen, have you seen those, like, the diagrams for, or, like, the videos for the space elevator?
Oh, that'd be neat.
So I guess
there's set it on the equator. I think I've seen, like, you know, theories of it. Like, building one, you'd have to put it on the equator. They have to be somewhere on the equator, I think, to keep it from spinning out or that to support it on the axis of the Earth. But
yeah, there's I don't have it pulled up here, but I read it like just the last week. There's a company in Japan that's hoping to build one by like 2035.
Oh, I mean,
it has to be.
They say where they're going to build it.
I don't have that up here. They're working on the technology on like these like carbon nanotubes to be able to hold the strength up.
Oh, that'd be neat.
Because they're going to have to support it to a certain height, right? They're gonna have to support it, and once it gets to a certain height and it starts to like the effects of gravity start to become negative,
right?
Then you can just keep expanding it. But to get it to that height is, I guess, that's the hard part. And then once you get it up there, you just rock yourself up to space in no time.
Yeah, I think most of the science fiction books I've read, if they had a space elevator, they built it somewhere in Africa, on the equator. I think that was the place to put it, which would be neat. I think. If you put something like that in Africa, like, you know, just the fact that you could, it's creating jobs. It's like, you know, you could shore up the infrastructure of that continent, which is constantly ripped apart. Might be good. I think that would be a pretty good.
Yeah, I think like a project of that size would like, that would like change a whole country.
Yeah.
It would take that many people. All right. That's all I got for space news. You got anything else?
Nope. That's it. That's right. My space news.
That's it. All right, topic of the day. We were kind of like between alien topics, so we decided let's talk about some cults.
Right.
How these either one man or one woman can convince a whole group of people that they are the Messiah or the chosen one, get them to follow them to do a whole host of crazy shit. And then
yeah, it's insane. I can't. You know, it's, I mean, we're not, I'm all for freedom of religion. If what you want to worship, that's your deal.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to put down any religions or anything like that. But some of these, like, you can't call them religions. They are cults, and it carries that extra implication that these are full on crazy people. The ones that we're talking about. Now, I'm sure there are small religious groups out there that, you know, aren't recognized as full religions. And I'm sure some of them do a lot of good. And some of them are, I know a lot of these groups are probably relatively harmless or benign in what they do. But the ones that we're going to talk about are just like,
they're on next level. They're the next level. Because I think like if you really think about it, like Catholicism, like the Catholic Church, If you look at their costumes and the shit they actually wear in like their big churches, like the Pope, the Pope and shit's walking around with a staff and he's got this big cloak on and these huge hats, all these bishops.
Oh yeah.
Super culty. But because they're not actually, not anymore at least, physically murdering people all the time in the name of God. They're like, oh yeah, it's just it's for the good. Like it teaches good life values. It's a good thing to be a part of. And you follow God and you follow his teachings.
Yeah, and I think I think most historians would probably agree that most of the religions today started out as cults. They started out with small followings and they kind of snowballed into, and whether it was divine providence or, you know, just luck, you know, just a confluence of events that led these religions to be the major. I mean, Christianity pretty much became a big religion because the Roman emperor at the time adopted it as the main religion, just because he had some sort of dream, or, you know, it could really been anything. So, or he was just feeling, you know, extra charitable that day. It just felt like he needed to convert. But if that wouldn't have happened, you probably wouldn't have Christianity today. We'd probably all still be worshiping Mars and Jupiter.
I love the old mythology more, to be honest.
Yeah, those ones are
cool. It's cool. Like, the stories are just way cooler. Especially, like, if you go, like, Greek mythology. And the gods and the titans and the half-gods and the demigods. And
yeah, I mean, that was back then, you know, religion to them was really, like, these gods were reflections of themselves. And it kind of just showed that how that these beings were almost just manifestations of just different the flaws and the virtues that they wanted to see in themselves, and a way to explain how the world came to be the way it was, because we didn't have science at the time, so it wasn't like you can really say, like, you know, clouds, atoms and clouds rub up against each other and then they produce lightning. And it's easier to say, well, this big dude lives up in the sky and throws down lightning bolts. So it's kind of easier.
You got this one motherfucker with a hammer on an anvil. He cooks up a lightning bolt. He tosses it up to Zeus. Zeus chucks it down in the clouds, and that's what you see. It's cool. Yeah, it's a cool story.
Yeah.
But some of the stories from these cults are nothing like that. So let's start with... I get the probably the most requested one. We'll do a quick overview of it, because it's you can really go deep into this one. But the Branch Davidians,
dun, dun, dun.
Famous for the siege in Waco, Texas, in 1993.
Yeah, big news all over the news. Everybody knows Waco's referenced in TV and film, a lot of things. And I think it was mostly, it was headed up by David Koresh, correct? It's David Koresh, right?
Yeah, so I got a timeline up here. I'll just go how it started. So the Branch Davidians started as the Shepherd's Rod, which is like a branch of Seventh-day Adventists.
Adventists, yeah.
Adventists, actually. And I'll do a little personal backstory here. When I was a little kid, my great-grandma, she was a Seventh-day Adventist, so... For my first, like, 5 years of school, I went to a Seventh-day Adventist private school.
Oh, that's so insane.
I learned all about these Seventh-day Adventists and how crazy they view the Lord. I remember being, like, 9 years old, and this teacher, he was a teacher / pastor or priest. I can't remember what they are. I think it was just a pastor, not a priest. I think that's Catholic. But he was screaming at us that if you didn't follow... the religion of Seventh-day Adventism and you followed Catholicism or anything else, when the judgment day comes, you would be torn from limb to limb and fed to the serpents of hell. And I remember this, like, word for word. I was like, what? I'm fucking 9 years old. This is guys preaching this at me. And this is a normal religion. Taxes that exempt probably, I don't know about millions, but tens of thousands of members in this church for sure.
Yeah.
So he pretty much, so what happened is he didn't, and I guess he didn't really like the Seventh-day Adventists. It wasn't exactly for him. So he created something called the Shepherd's Rod. That was in 1929. And it slowly grew popularity, and they set up, he founded Mount Carmel.
Right.
That's the Mount Carmel Center, and that's in Waco, Texas. He founded that in 1935. And then it had a whole bunch of people. And after a few failed prophecies, his wife, actually, he died in 1955, and he predicted the end of the world a couple of times, and I guess he never quite got it.
And that was, which guy was, that wasn't David Koresh.
Name was Victor Hotif.
Okay.
He was the original founder.
Right.
And anyways, after he died, his wife sold Mount Carmel to Ben Rodden, and he kind of took it over for a while. And this is when he changed the name to the Branch Davidians. And part of the thing was Hotif, however you pronounce that, he claimed he was the fourth angel. That was a part of the religion. He was going to oversee the end of the world and the transition from this dimension to the next, or whatever they like want to say. Then this next guy, Rodden, he renames the group the Branch Davidians, and he claims now he's the fifth angel, and he's foretelling of the revelation to come. Obviously, it doesn't happen. Then in 78, Rodden dies. And his wife assumes the role of the sixth angel. She predicts some shit. It never happens. Vernon Howell was his name originally, and then he changed his name to David Koresh. He joins the Davidians in 81. And this is when he changes his name to David Koresh in 81. And this girl, Rodden's wife, Louise, she tells him he's going to be the next coming of, he's the next angel. He's the next divine one. He's the Messiah, right? So he pretty much, at this time, he has all these people coming to Waco, Texas, to this Mount Carmel, or Carmel. Carmel? Caramel? I don't know.
Carmel. They said Carmel in the videos.
Carmel, yeah. Anyways, he convinces all these people that he is going to lead them through the judgment day, and then that the end of times is going to be in the book of in the Revelations. It said there's end times, and he's pretty much saying that it's the U.S. government is going to come, and there's going to be a battle, and that's going to be the end times. And pretty much the story goes in there. That's now we're into Waco, Texas. The ATF, because he is this guy, he is hoarding now all these weapons for this end battle, which he is predicting to come.
And yeah, they've been hoarding a whole bunch of assault rifles and shotguns and things. They've been stockpiling them for a good time, getting ready for the final apocalypse.
Final apocalypse, and this is what it is. The ATF comes. This is where you start to read a whole bunch of different stories about what happens here. But let's give the basics. ATF shows up. He knows that they're coming. Koresh knows that they're coming. One guy, what I kind of find with what seems to be the most reliable story, so I think what happened, and then they used it for their own means, is a guy who was climbing the ladder, shot himself by accident, got an ATF member. And then it triggered like the first gunfire battle. And then after that, this is the siege. It was, was it, 40 days or something?
Yeah. Oh, 40 or 50, 51, 51 days, something like that. It was long.
It was a long fucking, like a siege. They sat out there and the FBI took over after this, and they just sat there trying to, and they slowly let people go.
Yeah. They lit that place up though. I mean, it was like a real siege. They cut off power. They cut off power, water. They blasted music like 24/7 during the night and hit the house with spotlights. It was not handled very well.
Right. And then, it was 51 days. 51 days these people are inside. There's women and there's pregnant women. There's women with children. There's all these people in there. And they slowly release some people here and there. But in the end, they start throwing in, what do you call them? Like flashbangs and shit. This is the official story.
Tear gas. Yeah.
Tear gas and flashbangs and stuff. And it lights the building on fire. It lights this fucking, if you look at the pictures of this Waco siege, like the building is like on fire and there's people in there. So this is the government.
Yeah, it's it was a real nasty thing. And it's definitely a black spot on the federal law enforcement, like ATF and FBI at the time. There were tons of congressional hearings, people appearing in front of a congressional court, congressmen, senators asking them questions about what happened. And it's when you watch, if you actually watch those, they're nuts because like the people, I think what was the cause at the time, the real cause was that the FBI was actually in a time of like turmoil. The FBI was in a transition period, and that there were actually almost like two directors at the time. And so the people who were calling the shots, like nobody knew on the ground, those people in the ATF and the FBI agents that were there, nobody really knew who was in charge. So they would get an order and they do it. And then they'd say, oh, no, you weren't supposed to do that. And it's like, you can't really take it back. Like, I think cutting the power to the compound was not a good decision. And nobody really knows who gave the order to cut the power. And even most of the congressional court agreed, like, that you shouldn't have done that. Why did you do that?
Right.
You know? And those people that were inside, I mean, they were lining up a lot of what the military was – or not the military, sorry, the law enforcement. Like, they were lining up all that stuff with these prophecies that they had given. One of the prophecies, I think, was, like, they'll come with chariots that shoot fire or things like that, or chariots are on fire. And this is the first time that the law enforcement agencies had used tanks. Like, they had tanks. They had actual tanks on the ground. And they interpreted to their – as their apocalypse. Like, this was the end time for them. And I'm not sure, like you said, I'm not sure if it was the flashbangs that set the compound ablaze, or some people said, like, because the FBI and ATF had had listening devices planted inside the compound, and they overheard some of the people saying that they were going to light the place on fire. They were like, we're not going to go with them. Like, we'd rather go up in flames, or we're going to, that's the end of the prophecy. Like, we have to set ourselves on fire to go to heaven.
Yeah. It was like, they called them the soldiers of Babylon. That's what referred to them as, like, that was the government. And they said, right, we can't be taken by them. They pretty much said, take your own lives, burn this place down. Don't be taken by the devil, pretty much is what they considered the government to be.
I mean, yeah, it was a real nasty, nasty thing going down, and it just escalated really quickly, and it that shouldn't have happened. And I think it was just a time of the law enforcement didn't really know what they were doing. The people on the ground didn't know where their orders were coming from, and it was just really bad, really, really bad. And this was just after, like, you know, they had, not just after, but still Jonestown was still, which we could probably do a whole episode on that, but talk about Jonestown later.
Right.
And that's just, they couldn't, I don't know what they wanted to do. I don't think anybody knew what they wanted to do.
Yeah. And then this event, like, you read that this actually, like, what's the guy from Oklahoma City bombing?
Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah. He said he was directly triggered by, like, the events of this Waco siege. And then, and then that happened exactly two years later.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's weird how this, like, one guy, right? This fucking one guy can claim that he is the Messiah and he knows best, and he can take every woman in the group for himself, up to, like, I think it said, like, 140 women he could be entitled to marry.
Yeah.
And he was like, he was the voice of the God, and he knew best, and we must stockpile these weapons to defeat the evil enemies, or the evil army of Babylon, which was the FBI / ATF / whoever else was there, law enforcement. And in the end, how many people died in the end, actually? Quite a few.
Yeah, it was...
76 people died.
Six. Yeah.
Including, including David Koresh. Yeah. He died there, too.
Yeah. They do have... I think they got some people out, but... Yeah, up to 76 people. Like, that's a lot.
That's a lot. And it's like, it's fucking, this is weird. I don't know.
You know.
Just one of the many, many weird cults that, yeah. It's like people, like, you form a cult and, like, you have an idea, and people who are wandering or drifters and they have no sense of self and they're just looking for anything to hold on to, they kind of hear this guy talk and then they're locked in.
Yeah, and... You know, you really get these cult leaders, and a majority of them are male, and you get these really charismatic guys that all want to, you know, either they get a small following and then the power goes ahead or something like that. But not all the cult leaders are male. We have another one here, an Australian woman by the name of Anne Hamilton Byrne. And so maybe some of our Australian listeners know about The Family. which was a doomsday cult she founded in the 1960s, and she claimed to be Jesus reborn as a woman. That was her making her
claim. Of course.
She pretty much operated this cult for almost two decades. Like, nobody knew about it for almost 20 years. They didn't know about it. Like, she started this stuff in the 1960s, and then in 1987, two children escaped and actually informed the police, and they raided the compound that she had built. They showed that Hamilton Byrne, she had collected over 28 children. Saying like she raised, collected 28 children. She started off somehow preaching like Christianity. Now, she came from a type of probably non-traditional home. Her mother was originally diagnosed with schizophrenia and was admitted to a an insane asylum, a sanitarium, and where she died. Right. So she was pretty much raised by her father, who was spent a lot of times. He was like a social worker in Australia. He spent a lot of time in orphanages and stuff. But she somehow began preaching this kind of combination of Christianity combined with Eastern mysticism and apocalyptic prophecy. And she, when she gained followers, she forced many of them, including the children, to take dangerous amounts of LSD and hallucinogens. And so you're getting everybody high and you're getting everybody tripped out on LSD. She actually has an interesting connection to the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange. His mother had actually been married to a man who was a member of the cult. That was his stepfather. And they eventually had to go on the run from this guy because he was really dangerously crazy. The mother kind of figured that out over time and they left, but he never met her or anything like that. But that's kind of a weird connection to have. This lady, basically what her deal was, collecting children, and she would get these children through either adoptions, either legitimate or false. A lot of times they falsified adoption papers, or even members of her cult would give her their children, and she would take these children. She would dye their hair blonde, dress them up in the same clothes, like a Children of the Damned kind of thing, like blonde haired kids just all dressed the same. And it wasn't like she was a caring mother figure. She was apparently like one of the cruelest, or they categorize her as one of the cruelest cult leaders. Like these kids would pretty much be beaten on the regular for small little things, or denied food for getting their clothes dirty, speaking out of turn. These things would constitute a beating by her or members of the cult, and the members would just be like, they were in this lady's thrall. Like they didn't want to lose her affection. So they would, like, if the kids did something, it would almost be worse if one of the other people, the aunties, they called the other, besides Hamilton Byrne, they called the other women aunties, and these would beat them like within an inch of their life.
Jesus.
For these kind of things. After they raided the compound, they actually missed her. I think she fled to the U.S. She had tons of money because she married a pretty wealthy businessman, Australian businessman, and he pretty much just funded all this stuff. I'm not sure how far he was involved in all of it, but she built a compound that was far away from most prying eyes, and she could amass property both in Perth in Australia and in New York, and she hid overseas until she was arrested like relatively recently in 1993, and they caught her only on minor fraud charges. They caught her on some because of the fraudulent adoption papers. That's the only way they found her. Yeah, and they say like throughout the building of her cult, the big thing that got her was that, or the how she built it, was she actually recruited a physicist, Dr. Rainer Johnson, And this guy lent her cult like a type of legitimacy, saying that she had, you know, extrasensory perception powers and these things. So, and, you know, they did a lot of terrible things to these kids, and they've made it out, though. After that, right now, they cannot actually try her because they say that she's in like advanced stages of dementia. So she actually, you know, I could say that's either her punishment or whatever. But she will not face a trial since she cannot stand. She can't competently defend herself. So she's not able to stand trial.
Jesus.
Oh, they said, but interesting little fact, her weapon of choice was her stiletto shoe.
Takes it off in clubs people with it?
Yeah. Apparently she was quite a fashionista. Like, she was a lot of designer clothes, Chanel perfumes, you know, get out those nice shoes and, you know, wail on your kids, I guess. That was her thing. Really nuts.
Crazy.
Yeah. See, cults are dangerous things, you know, both men and women. And sometimes the women get a little bit, you know, like, how could you? I mean, when doing a lot of research into these things, you see a lot of similarities and how these people recruit and like how they gain followers. Often these people are either they're charismatic, they're influential in some way. They have some sort of, I think mainly what built her was they give these people, a lot of them, like they dose their followers with LSD or hallucinogens to give them that kind of, you know, they feel like they have some sort of spiritual awakening.
Yeah.
Sometimes, whether it's knowingly or unknowingly, and these experiences kind of bond those people who are already kind of, you know, who are already.
Well, it's like these people are like the people who get like swayed by the cults, by the cult leader, are people who are just looking for anything to like cling on to.
Yep.
And for probably the majority of these people were not, they were a little bit different maybe, but they were nothing crazy. And then they get like enthralled with this like person who is like saying all the stuff that they want to hear. And like, oh yeah, this guy, he knows exactly what he must be Moses. He must be the coming of God. Yeah. Like, he must be this person. I want to follow him. At the start, like, they don't even like, they're not forced to follow him. Like, they want to do, they go and they join him. And then it seems like after a while, these cult leaders, they kind of just, they can become power hungry, and then they just take ultimate control of the cult, and then either they commit some mass suicide by drinking some weird punch, or they're getting in a full-on gun war with the government.
Yeah. And a lot of them, I can see a lot of the ones in the United States, at least, they always tend to, a lot of these leaders tend to be offshoots from either Latter-day Saints. Or I'm not saying that anything bad about those church, but I'm saying a lot of them, they're off those offshoots of Christianity. They're off those, the more stricter, like, I guess, Protestant kind of beliefs. 100%. About you got your doomsday apocalypse scenarios. And they're saying, you know, they are staunchly believing that Jesus Christ will be reborn on earth and lead us here. So you can claim that you're the Messiah and people will believe you, because it's like, well, that's in the book, and you know, that's all you're pretty much allowed to read and these things. Some of these cults are just like they pervert a lot of the stuff. Like, you can take the Bible and they interpret these things that can be kind of twisted or to their own interpretation, and they use this to catch these people and pull these people in, and then either they have to satisfy some sort of dark desire that they have to control people or abuse people. And I mean, I cannot, for me, like, I can't believe for one second that anything in the Bible could really, you could look at that and be like, okay, this entitles me to 9 wives, and I don't care if they're married, you're gonna divorce her, she's mine now. Like, I don't know how you do that. I mean, even if you're the Jesus Christ, like, Jesus Christ never even got married. Like, yeah. I just don't know how you're, you know, it's just strange that alarm bells don't start ringing in your head when you see some of this stuff. But if that's all you're exposed to, I suppose, like, you're the kind of person who follows the tenets of these really strict religions, I guess it's easy to kind of move over into one of those ones, more extreme.
Well, just kind of like goes to show you how, like, humans, if not educated properly, can be easily persuaded by, like, a whole plethora of different things.
Yeah, and if you're not exposed to other cultures and you kind of just are insulated in some of these religions, it kind of makes it easier for you to be manipulated into, like, just a...
That's why I feel like, why I feel with, like, all religion. So imagine this. Imagine, like, now you have your kids and they grow up non-religious all the way till they're 18 or 20 or whenever, 21 or whenever you consider someone a full adult.
Right.
And then you're like, okay, now make your decision. What would you like to follow? No one's choosing religion at that point. No one's choosing an imaginary guy out of a book that was written by people hundreds of years after the supposed God was on the planet. Like, if you just if you're a kid and you are not witness to any of the stuff growing up, and then when you're 20, someone's like, this is what it is. You're like, motherfucker, no, it's not. All our science says is that that's probably not true. Maybe there is a God or a creator of the universe, but he's not one of these thousands of gods. He's probably some type of scientist. We're probably living in a computer simulation or something like that. Like, no one willingly would just accept blindly a ruler, like an unseen ruler who knows best for you and he always has a plan for you. Or, like, when people say, like, oh, that he died of cancer, and then they're like, well, God had a plan for him. It's like, well, that's a horrible God. Like, I don't know. It just seems weird that these people just can get so enthralled with some type of, with an idea that they will follow someone to drink a punch an arsenic punch that they know is going to kill them because they're going to meet the aliens on the other side. And you're like, well, I don't know.
That's our, we always, people reference, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, and that's the, I think that was, well, drinking the Kool-Aid was Jonestown. We'll probably talk about that one. And actually, fun fact, it wasn't actually Kool-Aid. It was grape flavor aid.
Flavor aid? Just like a food coloring?
Yeah, I don't want to badmouth Kool-Aid. I like Kool-Aid.
I used to love Kool-Aid. Those fucking powdery sugar drinks just, like,
delicious.
Destroyed my teeth as a kid.
But some of these, there's a documentary I watched recently called Holy Hell, and this one was actually about the Buddha Field cult that popped up in the late 80s or early late 70s, early 80s, kind of popped up, headed by this guy. His name was Michelle, but he's got a bunch of other names, and popped up as a following. And I think some of these cults kind of popped up because people were, I mean, in that time, you know, we're just coming out of Vietnam. People were looking for answers, and they're just looking for something more. Or the, you know, that transition between that generation that was, that generation of people, like, and seeing all this stuff that happened during the Vietnam War, are all kind of trying to explore their world and figure out where they fit in it. And he had this one place called the Buddha Field. And this guy was, you know, people came to him. I guess he was a yoga instructor at first, and nobody really kind of knew about him, he was kind of mysterious, and he kind of preached this. He started having these meetings, and they would talk about things, like, he would talk about, like, energy transference and Shakti and kind of like a combination of both, like, Hindu and, like, Buddhist principles and things like this. And to those people who hadn't been exposed to that kind of stuff at this point, it was amazing. And these people said they had weird, strange experiences with him, and they felt all kind of good. They felt welcomed. Like, at first, this cult started out relatively benign. And these people were, they were doing community service, and it was all about giving of yourself to like the community. And but then it just got kind of snowballed in this thing. Like they have a lot of the members talking about how this was like right after Waco, the leader, Michelle, felt threatened, and he thought that the FBI was going to crack down on him. So he took all these people he got up like in the middle of the night, took three of the followers and said, we're moving to Texas. And they move into Texas to get a piece of land, and so they don't get taken down by the FBI. And they followed him. Like, this guy was just like, these people were like, at the time they were feeling like they couldn't live without this guy. And they were waiting for him to call them so they could go move to Texas, sell all their stuff and move down there. And this guy turned out being when they dug into a little bit of his past, like later, they found out this dude was an out of work actor. This guy was an actor. He had been a ballerina. He had been a ballet dancer, and he apparently had started in a couple of homosexual pornographic films. And this guy ended up, for 22 years, he had been getting away with sexually abusing some of the male members, most of the male members in his following. Jesus. And nobody said anything about it. And it's just like, and some of these guys were like, it's the guys that it happened to were just, you know, when they talk about it, they're like, I didn't know what to do, you know?
Well, they think, like, they think that that person is all powerful, and whatever they're doing must be right. And they can't talk back against it.
Yeah. One of the leading, in the United States, at least, one of the leading guys who's like an expert on cults, his name is Rick Ross, which is pretty awesome.
Nice.
Rick Ross. He's a pretty prominent, he's a person you want to call to deprogram your family or your loved ones when they get pulled into a cult. This guy, he's been doing it. He does a lot of research on these cults and stuff like that. And he was saying that what cult leaders often do is they have these meetings and things like this, and they do these kind of therapy sessions, and they get you to relive a kind of like an abusive situation or a time of emotional trauma. And that brings you around to it builds a kind of connection with them, you know, and that's exactly what that guy did. He would have these therapy sessions with these people, and he'd get them he had a certificate that he was a certified hypnotherapist. Okay.
You know? Sure.
And he would take these people and get people to relive like times of emotional crisis or abuse. And these people would come out of it, and he'd be like, you know, they're there, you're safe, don't worry, blah, blah, blah. And it builds that kind of connection with them. And it's exactly what he did, whether he knew what he was doing, or he was just one of those people that's kind of aware of that happens when somebody does that. I don't know, but it seemed to start out pretty, you know, it started out benign, but then they say, like, maybe when they're looking back on it, they say he kind of changed when you get all these people like praising you and saying like they love you and they can't live without you, and they would do anything for you. And it, you know, you're not just changing them, but they're changing you into this whatever. You start thinking of yourself as the actual Messiah or things like that. So
fucking insane. It's crazy how one person can have so much persuasion over others.
Yeah.
In an obvious negative, it's negatively affecting the other people, and there's like, well, it must be okay, I guess. You know?
Yeah. Well,
he's really helping us here. He's really teaching us the right stuff.
Speaking of negatives, let me talk about the cult from your neck of the woods.
Maybe the craziest cult of all time. But you're going to have to wait 1 second while I take a pee, and we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. All right, we're back. What a long break that was with all those all those ads in between. Oh, my God. Sorry, guys. One of the craziest cults in the fact that this guy made his followers do the most insane shit. Okay, Dan, you're gonna have to help me with the pronunciation. Was it Roche Thérault?
No. Rock Thérault? No, what did I say?
Rock Thoreau.
Rock Thoreau.
Rock Thoreau?
Rock Thoreau?
Rock Thoreau.
Rock Thoreau.
Rock Thoreau.
Something like that.
I'm going with Rock. I'm going to go with Rock Thoreau. Obviously, he's a French-Canadian man. And going to school, he dropped out of school and started teaching himself the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
He was so convinced by it that he...
Best part of the Bible.
He was so convinced that a war between good and evil was about to come and it would bring an end to the world that he converted to the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So same as the Branch Davidians. So the Seventh-day Adventist Church, as you were saying, this is one of the more stricter disciplines of Christianity.
Yeah, I think they put a lot of emphasis on the apocalypse. I mean, which is cool. I mean, the apocalypse in the Bible is pretty neat. You know, it's a lot of cool stuff going on.
It's probably if I was going to reread, I read the Bible when I was like a little kid. But if I was going to reread it, I would just read Revelations. I think just to see what's going on in there.
Yeah,
it seems insane. Anyways, so the rules of Seventh-day Adventist Church are pretty much no tobacco, no unhealthy foods, no alcohol or drugs, and this is what his the
no
start.
No fun.
Just God. No fun. So pretty much, he was so charismatic that he persuaded all these people to join. His group, and they quit their jobs, and they followed his religious teachings based on Seventh-day Adventists to start, and he called them the Ant Hill Kids, and it was pretty much named that because he forced them to work so hard. And in 1977, he stopped calling himself Roche Thoreau, Rock Thoreau, and he started calling himself just Moses. My name's now Moses.
Just Moses.
Yeah, and they formed a commune free of sin and stood for equality and unity. Oh, yes, very, very good. Very good morals there. And, of course, though...
sure. It's very equal around there. I'm sure.
Yeah, very very nice place to be around. Very, very, very good. And then pretty much like every cult, it starts off nice, and then the good times, they quickly come to an end.
Mm-hmm.
The Adventist Church pretty much kicked them out of their religious group for their weird ass behavior. Like, they're super weird. We're gonna get to that. He forbid his followers to contact their families or develop drinking problems. Rules for the followers always became stricter and stricter up to the point where pretty much, they couldn't speak unless this guy would tell them, Moses.
God.
If he didn't say that they could speak, they couldn't speak to each other.
Yeah. That's a common theme in cults is isolation. That's a big thing, like, you know, taking away their privileges of communication or talking with other people, their family, or having pets, even things like that. That's a lot of cult leaders do that to kind of cement their power.
Yeah, it's like... It starts off nice. They're like, oh, yes, it's going to be a great time. And then this guy just takes over everything. This guy, he starts spying on his people, spying on his followers. And if they were not devoted enough, it got to the point where he would punish them by, he would hit them with belts and hammers. He'd be like,
well, belts and hammers.
Well, I said belts or hammers. God. You know what? I'm picturing a belt in one hand and a hammer in the other, and he's just fucking going to town.
Like a hammer, like attached at the end of the belt.
More like a flail.
Yes.
Man, this guy, he's insane. He would suspend them from the ceiling. He would pluck each and every hair on their body individually. He would just poop on them. Just like, this is what God says for punishing, for disrespecting the religion. God says, poop on you.
You're gonna disrespect Jesus? I'm going to disrespect you with my poo. And he's going to poop on you. Oh, gross.
So then in 79, he was convinced that the world was coming to an end. So he moved his whole commune out into the Canadian wilderness. This was in Quebec. Because he thought God would skip the chance to destroy Quebec for whatever reason. Like Quebec was, you know.
You're going to skip Quebec.
They're just going to skip Quebec's it. They're going to destroy the rest of the world, but they're going to draw the border right on Quebec, Ontario,
Quebec's
and
cool.
New York, and on the northern states on the East Coast there, and be like, you know what? Quebec's okay. They're about right. That's pretty much what you said.
What is it like? Alberta? British Columbia? No, fuck you. Quebecois, you're cool. I'll stay with you. You're fine.
You know what? Yeah, the French, you know, the French speakers, they'll stay. But obviously in 1979, when the world didn't end, he explained it away by saying that the world and God run on different time zones. This is how
God, that was funny.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry.
So, God's watch is like an hour slower than ours.
Yeah, God works on eons, so like I don't know. I just might have got it wrong by a thousand years or something.
They always try to do that. You know, it's like, oh, you know, they used a different calendar back then, and so the real date is like 2 years in the future.
I don't know how he explained it, but pretty much they lived in the woods forever. They slowly moved from Quebec into the woods of Ontario. And during this time, through all the girls that were with him, he bore 26 children. And obviously he went on, he got so insane, he started sexually abusing all his children. And then some of his wives would rat him out, and then the welfare authorities would come and take his children away. But they never did anything to stop the cult.
No. I mean, it's like, technically, if he's not... You know, they don't catch him in the act. That's the weird thing with these is like, you know, it's the same thing with like domestic abuse and stuff like that. It's the authorities can't even really do anything until they catch him in the act or they have some sort of solid proof of what's happening.
Anytime one of his kids would get sick or have like a pain, he would become the surgeon and he would use pliers or a blowtorch to take out teeth, take off limbs, fingers, toes, toenails. This guy was a fucking savage.
Like one of the women, she had, I think, what did she have? She had like a pain in one of her fingers or something. And he stabbed her hand and like nailed it to a table. And then once it started to turn black and blue from blood loss or whatever, he amputated it. He actually amputated it, and he had to attempt it twice because the first knife that he used was too dull. So then he had to cut it all the way off, and then he took an acetylene torch, heated up a piece of iron, and cauterized it. And had somebody stitch her up, and then there was that one, and then the one with his wife, one of his wives, Miss Solange, is it? That one. She was complaining of stomach pains, and he was like, next thing she knows, she's on the table naked, and he's cutting into her with a butcher knife. And takes out a piece of her intestine and like cuts it out, then just tells somebody, sew her up, patch her up. And then they did, and then she died the next day, of course.
Of course he died the next day. Jesus.
You know. He was cutting up these people and they're just like and it gets worse from there, yeah.
Like he would force people to eat their own feces, insects and rats. He would nail children to trees and then make the other children throw rocks at them for disobeying God or his teachings.
This was when he was, you know, they were letting him have pretty much free run. About then, the Quebecois authorities didn't do anything. He's out in the woods. Like, nobody can see them. Like, you know, nobody's really checking up on him and nothing.
Like, this is how insane. One of his wives, Gabrielle Lavallee, she endured blow torches held to her genitals, 8 of her teeth taken out, and a hypodermic needle breaking off in her spine. She And then she tried to escape, but then she realized she couldn't live without the cult, and then she went back to him after this happened. It's fucking insane. You know,
I cannot imagine being that committed to something to be like, you know, there's a steel needle in my spine and I have to go back to this guy, you know, who I just watched poop on one of the kids. Like, wow.
It's just insane. It wasn't until 89. So like fucking 12, 13 years after he started this cult and he had all these people in the wilderness and shit and doing all this crazy shit that he was finally convicted.
Yep. Put him in jail.
Life sentence.
Yeah. And he still had 4 kids after that. Yeah.
He had 4 kids after?
Yeah, while he was in jail. He was imprisoned. And like, I think three or four of the wives, they started a bakery. Like they made a bakery near the prison where he was caught, and he fathered four more kids after that, after they put him in jail.
It's like Charles Manson, man.
Went to jail. I know. He looks like a cross between like Manson and like Rasputin.
Yeah, he does.
You look at him, big old mountain man beard, bald head. This creepy looking dude.
Anyways, that's just another guy who took a religion, twisted his own way, converted a bunch of people, and then just destroyed their lives for about 12, 13 years.
Yeah. And, you know, some of them, I mean, the ones that we've talked about, at least most of them have been like offshoots of like or combinations of like mainstream religions. And I've got one that's even a bit crazier. And if you didn't think it could get weirder, they can get weirder.
Okay, Jesus.
We got this one, the Matamoros cult, which was founded by Mr. Adolfo Constanzo, born November 1st, 1962 in Miami, Florida. This guy, really strange. I mean, his life starts out just really strange. When he was 6 months old, his mother had him blessed by a Haitian priest, which this guy observed a type of religion called Palo Mayombe, which is a kind of an offshoot of a mainstream West African religion. And basically it involves drinking this liquid in which actual human bones have been boiled and they use it for like casting spells for power or wealth. His mother and her first husband, she had multiple husbands, believed that their son was a chosen one who is who is destined for great power. And, depending on the way you look for it, it kind of happened. So they moved his mother and him. They actually moved to Puerto Rico. And then in 1972, they moved back to Miami. And Adolfo pretty much had a free run of what to worship how he wished. I mean, if you're already in the kind of the Haitian stuff that's going on already, he started an apprenticeship with a Haitian priest who taught him things on how to profit from evil. This guy was already kind of, they said by 1976, he actually believed that he was developing psychic powers and predicting the shooting of President Ronald Reagan in 1981. They say around probably 1983, he pledged himself to, I think it's Kadie Mumpembe, which is basically his religion's version, that Haitian religion's version of Satan. So right. He was confirmed Satanist at this point. This dark god. And he said he could he started to claim that he could harness magical powers, and he started offering his services to people who were gangsters, or that he could make their bodyguards invisible to police or bulletproof. And he also had drug dealers scheduling their shipments based on his premonitions. So he had these kind of connections with these gangsters and drug lords, and he started amassing money. So after getting a considerable amount of money, he moved to Mexico City, where he bought like a $60,000 condominium. He had like tons of luxury cars. And he was, at this time, they believed that he was practicing actual human sacrifice, probably about here. And they attribute his cult were responsible for at least 23 ritual murders that they know about. In 1987, his cult said he murdered about seven people from a crime family after they denied him full partnership in their syndicate. They found these people, like they found the family, they tortured and mutilated their body parts and put them in what they said was Constanzo's cauldron. Like those body parts and things like this. What actually, like, he probably still would be doing things if not in 1989, this is what actually brought him really to the attention of the U.S. Him and some of his followers kidnapped and killed an American student, 21-year-old Mark Kilroy. And he was apparently, his family was pretty influential. And so after that happened, the U.S. started putting pressure on the Mexican government to bring this guy in. And after this happened, I mean, they found out, like, they were actually happy with the sacrifice that they gave of this kid, because they felt like his brain was good for sacrifice, which is insane.
Good, like, for sacrifice.
Yeah, they when they found his body, I mean, they found his body had been dismembered, like parts had been cut off, and his brain had been removed from his skull. And
Hannibal Lecter.
So they ended up catching him about in 1989, in May. They actually found him. He had a compound in Mexico City, that condominium. Like, they fled from that compound, disappeared, and then the police they caught another guy who was like a regular contact of his, and he told them where they could probably find him, and then the police said they were going door to door, and actually an unrelated case, and they found Costanzo and four of his followers, and they panicked. They started shooting. They said that about 180 policemen surrounded that apartment. The shootout lasted about 45 minutes. And then he ended up dying by asking one of his followers to shoot him and one of the other guys that was his lover. So they ended up being shot by this guy. Never Jesus. Brought to justice. Yeah. I mean, human sacrifice gets the voodoo cult. Like, this is a legitimate voodoo cult.
That's to the top.
You know, and I'm sure, I mean, there's probably a lot of good stuff. I mean, voodoo is probably a lot maligned in pop culture and movies and things like that, because that was kind of a big thing back in the 80s. I remember all the villains were voodoo from, what is it, like Predator 2.
Voodoo and, wizards.
Yeah, Predator 2, every Steven Seagal movie, they're all Jamaican, they're Haitian voodoo guys.
Yep.
I think. But this one was the real deal. And, you know, he started out, I think he had like three followers at first. And then just, you know, the fact that he somehow used his powers to help these crime lords. I mean, I guess it worked.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, if you can say that working.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, so that's one, the Matamoros cult. I mean, you can look more into it. There's a bunch of other stuff, and it's, yeah, that's another one that's real nuts. You know, that didn't even have to do with family or anything like that. That one just had to do with this guy. This, you know, these people that are following him, whether it's because of the money or things like that. Just, yeah, creepy.
Fuck. There's no, You could probably find even crazier ones in this if you really dug deep, but as far as like mainstream cults go, these are some of the most known and the most insane.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't touched on any of the. I know there's gonna be a bunch of people coming out. I know we didn't talk about Jonestown a lot. That's probably something we could do on its own. Yeah. I know the Japanese cult that was responsible for the 2004 sarin gas attacks. That's a really weird one too. You could probably do a whole episode on that one as well. And, you know, there are cults every day, you know, and like I said, some of them are benign. Some of them technically you could say that Jedi is a cult. There are people who actually follow it, but you know, it's relatively harmless, you know?
Have you ever seen there's an actual fighting competition that is lightsaber dueling?
That's awesome.
Have you seen it? Man, is it cool.
I think I've seen a couple of the things, videos of it.
They do full on choreographed like lightsaber duels, and it's like it's judged, and it's like actual competition. It's pretty sweet.
That's awesome. That's cool. Good for them.
I would take part. I'm not going to join full time, but I'd like to, I don't know. I'll try. I don't know. I think judging by all these cults, I think I could start my own cult.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think cult is the way to go. I think we should take this podcast just to cult status. We'll get our own set of rules. We'll make up our own religious figure. Our own
God. We're gonna get that tax exempt status.
That's what I'm talking about. I think that's why religion, like modern religions, they're always trying to get religion status, because they know, like, oh, we can, all the money they're giving us now, we can just get it for free.
Yeah, and I'm not pushing on anything like bad mouthing religion. For me, I think that religion is, at its core, is useful. Like useful, I would say, is something that is supposed to bind people beyond the ties of blood. That's what I think is what it should be. I think that's kind of what it came out of. Like, you had to have a way of putting people at a unifying people beyond just family. I mean, you start out with things we started out as just tribes of just, you know, related members, you know, brothers, sister, aunts, uncles, grandfathers, things like that. But once you get past that, you know, what holds us together is really, you have to have some sort of shared belief or shared goal of what's going to happen. And, you know, but some of them invariably just get taken over by these people. Like, somebody twists it or into this kind of this stuff that happens, and it's just sad.
Yeah. Like, I'm on board. Like, religion, it spawned from this people watching the stars and then making up stories to go along with the stars. And then people take those metaphorical stories and turn them into truth, or try and make them true, and then follow an imaginary figure. But I think religion has just been perverted to a way that it's a mind control. It's a control tactic.
Yeah.
If some of these mega churches you see where they have like 25,000 people in like a stadium church.
Yeah,
everyone's supposed to is required to pay 10% tithe to the church. So if you make, you know, you're making 50 or 60 grand, you're paying $5,000 or $6,000 of your wage to the church.
Hey, that's 10% of your wages for eternal salvation. I think that's a pretty good deal.
and then you go like, all right, why the fuck does God need money? He's not even from exactly. here. He's an alien. God's,
why does he need a giant mega church? Like, why does he need this giant glass chandelier?
So, like, I have a, you know, when you have like Jehovah Witnesses come to your door and they knock and they give you your pamphlets and they're like, oh, can I interest you in the Word of God? And I go, listen, man, if you admit to me that God's an alien, I'll listen to what you got to say. And they're like, well, I was like, what do you mean? It's like, well, you always say God's not from this earth. He's an alien. God's an alien. And they're like, well, he's a light being. He's not from this plane. He's not from this plane. Exactly. God's a motherfucking alien. That's why I tell the Jehovah Witnesses they come to my door.
every day.
Well, they come almost every week. Like, I'm in a neighborhood where there's like, they must live here, and like, it's their job. They got to go out and do 20 houses a week or something, because they're always here.
Yep.
So I either open the door in my underwear or I open the door talking about God's an alien. And that's all good. Like, but what I don't like is they always come with a kid. The kid's like 10 or 12 years old. And they're just like brainwashing this kid. You got to
put some pants on real quick.
Yeah.
Then you put pants
on. One second. The joke's over now. I do not want to get convicted for anything here. This was a funny joke gone wrong. There's now a 12-year-old girl outside my door. I better put at least long underwear on. Not just a straight old man ginch. No, it's just weird. The religion, it's like, there's 3,000 religions. It's okay to believe in whatever you want. I don't care. Don't come to my house and preach to me about it. Believe what you want. Pay your tax, your tithe dollars to the church. I don't care. But when people take that and pervert it even farther to like this cult status where they're making people, where they're ripping people's fingernails off, and they're getting people to sledgehammer their own legs, if they're going against the teachings, like, no, man, that's mm-mm. not right. That's crazy.
It's, I can't. Yeah. It's these cults are just there's this weird thing, and it's like they're never I don't think they're ever going to go away. Like this will always as long as there's humans on Earth, like there'll always be those people who are disenfranchised or looking for answers, and there will always be somebody there invariably to take advantage of that. And it's like you just have to be careful, you know. There's a lot of we should have looked this up, but there, you know, if you think your friend is in a cult, you should probably do something about it. If you see somebody who's, you know, I don't think, like, at this point, like we said, like when you said that they're creating this network of when SpaceX puts up their giant internet and everybody be connected, like, I think it should be less, you know, less these people are disconnected, or when we become more connected as a society, I think it might die down, but you never know.
Well, we live in the age of information. Anyone could just go on the internet and be like, okay, there's this guy, he's talking about this God, and you know, he has these rules, and if I join him, I'll be eternally saved. All you got to do, if your friend's in a cult, first of all, get him to listen to Alien Theorists Theorizing Case File 60, and then tell them to go search what these cults do and what happens after a few months or a few years of being in this cult, and the guy starts ripping off your fucking fingernails and bashing your shins in with a sledgehammer because you weren't obeying his orders. I mean, that's all you got to do.
Yeah. You know, I think people just need to learn to you know, just source your information. Like, don't always take one person's view into consideration. Always, you know, if somebody never take anything for what it is. I think face value is always kind of overrated. If somebody says something, be able to look up where they got that information, question it. And if it looks okay, sure, you know, and it doesn't hurt anybody, why not? Like, okay, it could be cool, but you know, just don't follow anything blindly. Just always examine your options. And
no, like, it's fine. Like, if you hear something, you're like, oh, that's cool, but you don't just automatically accept it for 100% truth. Even if you don't even go look into it, if it's true or not, just be like, well, that's cool, but like, I don't know. But some people will like hear something and then they'll instantly be like, it all makes sense now. And then all of a sudden you're flying around the world to Flat Earth Conference, and you're 100% convinced that the Earth is flat, and the entire scientific community, every government, every person in the know, every astronaut, every motherfucking person in the world is lying to you for the Earth, is because the Earth is flat, and the only reason it's flat is to hide God. That's pretty much, you could almost consider like the Flat Earth a cult.
You know what? It all makes sense now. Where is the Flat Earth Conference? What, I'm gonna buy my ticket right now.
We missed it this year, but next year we should all. I mean, honestly, we should go.
God, that'd be
man.
That would be a bloodbath. That's what that would be.
Yeah, we'd get fucking killed. We would get fucking gang raped and killed. That's what would happen to us.
Be terrifying. That'd be like some Die Hard stuff right there.
Okay, well, maybe we won't do that, but that was just a good reference, because you know, you see a couple of videos on YouTube and you can't see, you can see farther than you should supposedly, and then all of a sudden the Earth is flat. I don't know.
Groovy. So anyways,
I think that's pretty much it. What we got now. That's pretty much it for cults. I mean, there's hundreds or thousands of cults if you really go looking, but some of those ones are just the most insane ones we could find.
Yeah, those are the craziest ones. So what do we got? We got shout outs? What do we got?
I got some shout outs. It's been a while. So I'm gonna give Zell's Prolapsers of the Week.
Da-da-da-da.
Bree Verdone. She has been sending us some information about HIV and AIDS, and she's a health professional, and she has been really interested in that topic. So there's always the conspiracies of where AIDS came from.
We're gonna cure that one day. CRISPR, dude. CRISPR, that's going to get it.
Man, CRISPR's insane.
CRISPR's going to get it.
We had Bree Verdone. Annie Marie, she sent us some cool stuff about some MKUltra stuff. And
pop that LSD.
Mind control... Hey, mind control is real. It's scientifically provable. You can control people's minds. Yeah. Look at cults. It doesn't take much.
Yep. Nope.
But MKUltra is...
Some of them don't use drugs. It's just like, you know, pushing the right buttons.
Yep. Right flashes of light and the right drugs, and all of a sudden you got...
Brain's just a machine. Brain's a machine. It's a computer.
It is.
Put the right programming in, you get what you want.
Exactly. And Paige, she goes by at @alien_BBY_ on Twitter. She's the first person to reach out after we said we are going to AlienCon in June.
Yes.
And
yes.
She thinks that she wants to show us around and help us out. She's from West Hollywood, but she's from Pasadena at some point. So she's
raise a ruckus.
She's the first one to reach out and say that she'd help us out. So that's sweet. And I think Dan is going to be here. Aren't you, Dan?
Yes, I will be stateside for that. So I'm planning on going.
We had a tentative for Dan, but it looks like Dan will be coming, and Braden, Andrew, and Dan will all be going to AlienCon.
United.
June 14th, 15th, and 16th will be in Pasadena, California. It's gonna be a great fucking time.
It's gonna be fun.
We have all these reviews to read. We keep forgetting. And they're building up. So I'm just going to read a few. And we're going to get to them all. So everyone who's read a 5-star review and we don't read it, know that we have at least seen it. And we appreciate the fuck of you writing it for us. Because it really, that's the only way. There's two ways to go up the charts in iTunes. Reviews and subscriptions. So number one, if you are listening to the show without actually pushing subscribe, just push subscribe. It's super easy.
Just a button.
Just one little
click.
Just a little click. You know, and if you feel like going a little bit farther because it's a free show and you can just listen to anywhere for free, just go a little farther and then leave a 5-star review. And then this happens. Then we read them. So, Legends, 5 stars from Rashes, USA. One of my favorite podcasts ever. Love from Puerto Rico. Ron Pond would be proud. Isn't Puerto Rico still all fucked up from those hurricanes?
I think they're rebuilding the power grid. They did have a power plant explosion lately, but they're still rebuilding. I think.
But for like months, months, yeah. They were like out of power in certain parts, portions of pretty the rough. Island. And then didn't Trump call it like a shithole or some shit? I don't know.
Yeah, he said a lot of things. He says a lot of things.
He does say a lot of things. It's actually like funny. It's funny to listen to how much shit he actually says.
I can't take him seriously. You put like if you put Trump in a news article, I feel bad for the people who have to write it. I feel bad for the people who like these are legitimate journalists. Like these are credited journalists and they have to write about this stuff. And the stuff he says, like when I read it in an article, like all the really nice writing, like the you know, really intellectual. And then you have this stuff that Trump says and it's like. It just flush everything down the toilet. It's just like, I don't need the.
It's like, it's this happening right now in the American political system that makes me just realize that the heavy. Political system is a joke and it's not the party is like, because I just reread the book in 1984 and the party is just the inner party and the outer party are the outside politicians like the senators and shit. And these people are just all working for their own interests and they don't give a fuck. So when Trump becomes president, like you're just like, huh. Like I don't even know anymore. What's going on?
You know, this might be the thing that wakes up some people. You know, it's just like this is, it's so the only thing is like, I want him to. I mean, every day I wake up and I read the news, and he's done something stupid, or he said something, or he's connected with something, and I'm hoping that this will be the turning point, and things will, you know, he's probably setting global development back like probably a decade at least.
Well, like,
you know, with the stuff that he can't do, or he's trying to shut down programs that are going to invariably, you know, wreck the entire United States. But, you know, I'm hoping that after this, like, somebody will come in and, you know, they'll have to work it from the ground up. Maybe he burns everything down and we just have to build from the ground up.
Well, here it is. Here's from outside of American view. Because everyone always says like, oh, Obama, he's for change. He's really going to change this place. And then Obama bombs more countries than Bush. And then, you know, then Obama gets voted in again. And like, oh, yeah, everything. We're closing down Guantanamo Bay. We're getting out of it. And like, they never say what they're going to say. And then Trump gets in. And everyone's like, oh, Trump's, he's the savior. He's going to save us. and then nothing happens. It's just more bullshit. So when the next person comes in, they're like, he or she's going to save us. And then it's going to be like, no, it's the same bullshit just over again. So it really makes me think that the people actually running the United States or running the Western world in general, it's like an oligarchy. It's, or what's a monopoly?
Oligarchy.
Yeah, that's what it is. So you have like four or five giant corporations probably pulling most of the strings, and like they're just putting so much money into the system that the pony show is this Trump, and there's like making fun of Trump and what he's doing. But really, it's not really Trump. He's just one guy. It's probably like everyone else around him, all the corporations, all the shit. So like, when people are like, Trump's going to save us or Trump's an idiot, like, you're both right. Equally, like, there's no right way, because everyone always says the next president's coming in. For the last like 6 or 7 presidents, yeah, he's gonna save us. He's gonna change our foreign policy. We're gonna get out of these wars. You know, we're gonna do all this stuff. Nothing changes. Never. Mm-hmm. Nothing ever changes as people start yelling about different things instead. And then the next person, what? In one more year, you're gonna see the next election race heat up, and you're gonna have two more people. You're like, both these people are probably shouldn't be the president anyway. And then you're just gonna have to vote for the one you don't like the least, you know?
Yeah, it's like you said, it's always the same. I watched the Ken Burns documentary on the Vietnam War, and if you watch that, like, you'll just see like history repeats itself. Definitely, like, watch all the stuff about the Vietnam War and how things shaped up, like, from beginning to end, and it's like it's just repeating itself now. Everything. It's a cool documentary. Real fun to watch.
Everybody really check it out.
Education. It's pretty neat. Any more? What do we got?
I went down a little tangent there. I had a few beers, and then you know, Trump comes out, and then he's like, "Well, this whole world's all fucked up. The whole world's all fucked up, boys. Not just Trump. Everyone's fucked up." My go-to 5 stars from Charfitz3 USA. USA is definitely our most listened country by a lot. It's awesome. USA beat.
We're not good at hockey. We're not good at hockey, but
hey, USA, women's team. USA is great at hockey. Actually, they're like this. Canada. Canada always just beats them. But this year, the ladies, USA ladies, mm-hmm. took the gold medal.
Yeah,
there's actually more exciting hockey than the men's because there's no NHL players in the Olympics, so it's super super lame. So Charfitz 3 USA. You guys are my go-to for work. As working third shift, I'm up all night. I am currently working my way through your podcast and love them. Can't wait to see what is next. Love you guys. My wife hates the fact I discuss theories with her, especially when I talk like Ron Pont. Keep it up, guys. The prolapse is real. I still think it's hilarious. Some people call it prolapsing, but
I hate it so much. You guys will never know how much I really hate that. I can't believe that stuck.
It's stuck, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Oh, it's gonna be there forever.
I think originally we were gonna call it like our followers theorites or something, but then it came to prolapsers, and then it just stuck. So
it's just stuck.
Anyways, I'll do one more. Awesome. Zendo 69 USA. Just happened to stumble across this podcast and have listened nonstop since. It's entertaining, enlightening, funny, and deep at times. Definitely worth a listen. Thank you.
Awesome.
It's a good review.
Thanks.
We've got a couple one-star reviews that I'll read on after hours one time. Because some people some people get offended very easy. Just so offended. And they're like, I've wasted 10 minutes of my life listening to your podcast. Right. Well, there's 10,000 podcasts. Let's move on. Who cares?
What's the difference? Lots of other podcasts. You'll find something that you like. It's okay.
Yes. It's just funny.
If we're not your bag, that's okay. That's all right with us.
And my last quick shout outs, just our new Patreon supporters. If you want to support the show, if we get to 100 Patreon supporters, we will do a weekly show. And we're at 90. So only 10 more people.
Oh, man.
And I've just opened up a new tier because I heard some people complaining that $5 is too much per month. So we now have a 1, a 3, a 5, a $10, a $25, and a $50 tier. So the new tier, $3, is early access to every case file and all after-hours content. And $5 a month, we have new podcasts coming up. We have our Dungeons & Dragons podcast, which is
gonna get it
edited, scored, and being narrated as we speak. It's actually pretty, I think it's fucking hilarious. So you guys can tell me when it comes out. And Brayden has pledged that he will be doing his true crime podcast. He's been saying it for months, but he is actually going to get down to it. I'm going to write the theme song, and he's going to do it. So support us on Patreon, patreon.com/alientheorists. We support,
I'm gearing up.
We support every dollar. New pledges. Kelly Hendricks, Holly Mellon, Dulcie Schultz, Caleb, Kelsey Din, Liam, Christopher Walker, not Watkins.
Christopher Walken?
Oh. No, Christopher Walker.
Got me so excited.
Mana Taripo and Mel Sabel. Oh, sorry. Wait. Oh, Mel Sabel, you deleted your pledge. That's okay.
Oh.
You were there for a few months. You know, if you can only donate for a few months, like, that's just the way it goes. It's no big deal. We take whatever we can get. We appreciate everything. And that's it for shout-outs. Dan, what do you got?
Not much. Coming back stateside. I'm excited for AlienCon. And that's pretty much it for right now.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
We'll get the rest of the theorists. We'll be back on shortly. But instead of making you wait another 2 weeks, we thought we'd do one now. So if you hate me and Dan, then thank you for listening this far. If you didn't mind it, then thank you also. All right. I think that's it.
Cool.
Keep those eyes on the skies. Peace out.
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.